Welcome to Veterinary Advice, Animal News and Views, the place for pets and the people who love them.
Here, kitty, kitty, kitty.
Here are your hosts, practicing veterinarians Dr. Roger Welton and Dr. Karen Lewis.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Veterinary Advice, Animal News and Views. I'm one of your co-hosts, practicing veterinarian Roger Welton, here with my co-host, Dr. Karen Lewis. How are you this evening, Karen?
Hey, I'm good. How are you doing?
I forgot. Oh, wait. No, I'm not one of the patients we're talking about today. We're talking...
God.
Terrible joke, I know, but we're talking about, since we have no email, because nobody loves us this week, we are going to dive right into our topic. It's a great topic. I think it's so relevant. It's based on one of your lovely articles. We're talking about cognitive dysfunction. For those of you who don't know what that means, it's, as you said, Dr. Karen, doggy dementia.
Or doggy Alzheimer's, some people like to call it too.
Doggy Alzheimer's. Now, is there any correlation between cognitive, I'm sorry. So in people, there's, I guess, kind of a distinction between just run-of-the-mill dementia as Alzheimer's. One's more degenerative in nature. Have we proven in Alzheimer's in dogs yet, or?
Well, actually, there's some similarities, and I didn't put these in my article, but when I was reading about it, the hallmark of Alzheimer's is the formation of amyloid plaques in the brain.
Right.
And they actually are suspecting that dogs' brains with severe dementia do actually have amyloid plaques as well. So that begs the question of, is this pathophysiology the same? The difference is, Alzheimer's, true Alzheimer's disease in people tends to have a more familial trend, meaning you inherit it and it runs in the families.
Right.
And in dogs, we can't research that because you get your dog from the shelter. Or, you know what I mean? Like, we don't even know a dog's birthday is half the time. So
yeah, sure.
There's no family history we can correlate at all. But there does not seem to be a glaring predisposition among breeds. So if it was genetic, you would think some breeds, you know, would have more of it than others. And I mean, there's some people who think there might be more than this, but there's no, like, one or two breeds that it's like, whoa, you know, this breed is really bad for that. So I think we're still in the course of figuring that out.
I think I wonder if, you know, the more we know about it, because I think we're learning our understanding of the disease or diseases, let's say, that lead to cognitive dysfunction. I think our understanding is increasing exponentially. It's really being heavily studied. I know Washington State's doing a ton of work. I'll get into a little bit of some of the things that I learned sitting through lectures all day. I thought I was just going to, you know, go to maybe I'll pick up something new here on doggy dementia, cognitive dysfunction. I sat there all day. I was just like riveted. This was like last year's North American Veterinary Conference. Amazing. Things that I really never kind of picked up on, like the whole selective hearing thing as dogs get older, you know, and I'm sure you got a lot to fill in on that. So, let's dive right in there because this is such an important topic. So many of us have dogs that are living way longer than they used to because of fine veterinarians like us that are keeping them physically alive. But the mental aspect, it's extremely important. It's so important, not just for their quality of life, but for, I guess the pet's role in the family and also having them around children and the role that can be, that can play. And I had a little experience that I could share. Down the road a piece that, you know, there was problems with that very nice dog who started to show some dementia. But,
I lost one of my dogs to dementia. I think I might have mentioned this, but he was healthy. And his brain just didn't work anymore, but he was an otherwise medically healthy dog. So but we see that with dogs where it's like if their brain is going, they're gone. It's
they're,
like the,
they're
the
a shell.
Personality. Yeah, the personality that you knew isn't there anymore. And so... it's really hard for owners to get that, like, well, but he doesn't have cancer or he doesn't have kidney failure. You know what I mean? Like you want something you can diagnose that you can say this is a big, bad disease. And dementia is just so wishy-washy, you know, nobody really likes to.
Sure. They don't have senior moments because they're not articulating anything.
Exactly.
You know, they're not forgetting their keys or where they parked their car or something like that.
Yeah.
You know? So let's dive right in. Whatever you want to begin with, like recognition, what have you.
It was I guess your article would be a good place to start. You know, and if you're curious, on my website where I have vetchick.com, where I put this article, the picture of the dog there in the article is actually my dog that I lost to cognitive dysfunction. He's a dachshund. And he's an old dude, and he still has some light in his eyes in that picture. But anyway, just a little. I'm still a proud mom and have to brag, so just forgive me.
Well, okay. Of course, you know you're what's it called? Memorializing him a bit and making his passing mean something. You know, we can learn something from it. So.
Yeah, and he was just an awesome dog. So hey, so anyway, so I'll talk about some of the symptoms that he had. And what's hard is, and this I did this, and you might have done this too, Dr. Roger, where when the symptoms are developing, you don't really like quite notice it until you kind of sit there and look back, you know, and you're like, wait a minute, 6 months ago he used to do this, and now he doesn't, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like like vomiting. It's a symptom. You see it. Oh, my dog. You know what I mean? But like, it's all so gradual. It's so hard to tell, you know.
And subtle at first, too.
Yeah. And so you're like, am I crazy? Am I going with dementia? You know, I mean, so the big symptom, you know, just general disorientation, not knowing where you are. But what I see with most dogs, and the most striking one to me is pacing. My dog did this. He was like a wind-up toy. He could not ever lay down and get comfortable. He would just walk around the edge of the room. He would actually get stuck in a corner and keep walking like a wind-up toy that was still going and not understand why he wasn't moving forward. He was visual. He could see. It just his brain didn't process, I'm in a corner and not moving forward anymore. And I have a lot of people who will tell me that, hey, my dog, usually at night when you notice it more, you know, that I thought my dog was sleeping all night, and then he's just walking in circles, and he won't get comfortable. And they're like, is he in pain? And there's an overlap here. Yeah, he could be in pain, you know, which is why he doesn't want to lay down. But he also could be just not really even aware of what he's doing. And to go another part of the dementia package is actually like off circadian rhythms. I don't know a good way to put that. But like just not, you know, night waking and then sleeping all day and kind of getting their days and nights backwards.
So there's an equivalent in people. I mean, you hear very, I see a lot of unfortunate, it's sad here because in Florida, a lot of seniors, obviously it's a retirement haven. And, I've seen so many clients of mine suddenly stop showing up. It's, you see it in the wives or you see it in the husband and, you know, they tell, oh, you know, he or she's in the early stages of Alzheimer's. And, the very common thread that I get is at night it's worse. It's much harder at night. So that makes sense. There's an equivalent there, an analogous
clinical sign. Well, and because in humans they call it sundowning, you know, and that is they in the morning they're good, and then I have a client with Alzheimer's, and you got to get to her before noon because at noon she can start. I mean, it's really, but if you get her first thing in the morning, you can do stuff. So, and in terms of quality of life, the night waking is really what bothers owners the most. I don't know if I've shared this story before, but we had our carpet replaced. All the urine, vomit-soaked carpet from having multiple dogs. We had torn up and replaced it with laminate. I joked that I wanted to put a drain in the middle of our living room floor so I could just hose it down, but they wouldn't let me do that. So we had a laminate floor in our bedroom. And the very first night on our lovely new laminate floor, no one got sleep because I didn't realize how much my old dog paced all night. On carpet, you couldn't hear it.
Right.
Now I could hear his toenails click, 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 click,
click, click, click, click, click, click, click, click, click,
click,
I've heard it. I have one room with laminate, and I, oh my goodness, I can't even imagine.
I was like, put the piece of carpet back. I want it back now. just put it back. So, and he was at the age, he always slept in bed with us before, but we couldn't put him in bed with us because he'd fall off the bed in the middle of the night randomly. And I was like, well, he's going to kill himself. So we had him, we made a nice bed for him next to us, but that he apparently would just, and so that was actually when I first was like, oh, we have a problem. He's A, up all night, B, getting stuck in corners, and C, just pacing. So that's what I see a lot. Another big one is house training, potty accidents. And people think, oh, he's just getting mad and spiteful. Now, do you have a lot of people come in and complain about that?
Spiteful or incontinence. So
yeah. And
he needs a doggy depends.
Different thing that you can actually treat.
Right.
You know, in girl dogs.
And incontinence is, for those who don't know the word, it's basically you've lost control of urine or bowels, just the control is not there. So we've all heard of depends, most of us.
Or in girl dogs, it's your peer. You know, they leak urine.
Yeah, when they're sleeping.
Yeah, so, and that's a different thing, and that there actually is medication for. That's if your girl dog gets up and she's might even be kind of licking herself, and there's a puddle there, and she's just as surprised as you are, usually. That's the incontinence. But yeah, and so anyway, the house training thing, my old guy towards the later stages would, in his pacing, would urinate while walking and not even know he was peeing. And he was a boy, so, and he was an old boy, and his little noodle was a little saggy, and he was a dachshund, so he was low to the ground. So his pee was always this zigzag shape, because his little noodle would swim back and forth when he walked, and the pee would come out, so we had this long Z's across our floor. It was never a line. Yeah. And we were like, oh, honey. So
gravity took its course as well.
Yes, apparently. Poor guy. So anyway, too much information about this. But yeah, so anyway, so those are the main symptoms that most people see. Some animals will actually become more vocal too. Just kind of lay there and howl or just, you know, make a noise. You're like, what's that for? And they're like, I don't know. Is that me? Yeah, it wasn't me, you know, and it's kind of an awkward thing. So anyway, and if you're seeing any of these, or if you're not sure, you know, talk to your vet, and they can kind of help you sort it out. Is this pain? Is this dementia? Is it both? You certainly have both. Is it a bladder infection? Is it incontinence? Is there vision or hearing affected? There's so many things that can all start to go in an old dog that there's, you know, it's never just one thing. We can say, oh, it's this, you know, unfortunately it's complicated. So there's no treatment, like with Alzheimer's disease in people, there's no cure, but there are things we can do to address it and manage it, I guess. I would say it's not really curable, it's manageable. So when you were at the symposium, Dr. Roger, what was the number one thing they said for management? What was the trendy thing?
So I guess before I get to that real quick, the recognition part, and you mentioned obviously the classic signs.
Yeah.
But they were talking about also the whole selective hearing thing, quote unquote.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so suddenly you got to say your dog's name four times, you know, and people just, yet when you pour the food in the dish, ooh, they hear that really well, right? So a lot of people joke it's selective hearing. And, you know, I used to buy into that even as a vet. I'd be like, yeah, you're probably right. You know, you call him, he's like, eh, I'm a little arthritic. I don't really need to get up. I don't hear any urgency in that voice. But then they hear the thing that, you know, motivates them the most. They're like, oh, I'm up. Okay, it's chow time. So, but what they were finding, and this is through, like, very, very intensive study. I mean, the amount of things, the amount of tools that the cognitive center, they have a cognitive center there. At Washington State University,
wow.
The amount of tools that they have to evaluate these dogs, you know, picking different shapes and colors to press the right button to get the area with the food, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
That they have, you know, they have controls, and it's amazing. It just, I was absolutely just flabbergasted, how much they ascertained from the various tools that they have. But that's one thing, though, that they were very clear. The majority of these dogs with quote unquote selective hearing, they did a selective hearing study, you know, and what they found was that 80% of these dogs actually were in the early stages of cognitive dysfunction. Some of them as, you know, young as 10, 11 years old, which I found fascinating. So don't just assume they're being, you know, grumpy old men that only are going to get motivated by food. The thing about it is, and what the behaviorists were discussing, some of which, by the way, are also neurologists, which was just truly incredible.
Yeah.
They were discussing that the one of the most recognizable things in their lives is feeding time. They're very passionate about getting fed. It's one of the things they live for.
Oh,
right?
It's a highlight of their day, yeah.
It's a highlight of their day, right? Us coming home and getting fed, right? They just wait for that all day long. So it makes sense that that's going to be one of the last things to go. Right, hearing the food bowl. It makes sense that that's going to be one of those recognizable things in their life. Treatment-wise, of course, though, obviously the mainstay is selegiline. That's still an oldie but goodie, unfortunately.
Do you use it often in your practice?
I do. The drawback is the cost, because
and it's a hard sell.
Yes.
I know.
Yes, and it's sold generic. So here's the frustrating part, and I'm not sure if you navigated through. What are we, 2 years apart in practice?
Mm-hmm.
So you might have experienced this too. So there is the name brand, which is Anapril, mm-hmm. which is crazy expensive, right? Yeah. And then you used to be able to go with the generic selegiline that was a little annoying because it only came in 5 milligram.
Right.
But, so you had to give lots of pills, but since it was like less than a penny a pill, you could prescribe it to a newfie. It's still way cheaper than Anapril. And then suddenly, I don't know how many years ago it was, I was already in Florida, so it had to be like maybe 06, 07. The generic got more expensive than Anapril, right?
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Well, and then Anapril was off the market for a while where you could get nothing.
Nothing. Yeah, period. Yeah. So sorry, I got nothing for you. Maybe try Prozac. So, but that's your mainstay still?
Well, yeah, but honestly, I don't have very many, because I tell owners, I'm like, nothing's guaranteed in life. And you could spend $100 on this drug, and it might, I have people who swear by it and change the dog's life, and I have people who are like, it did squat, you know? So, right. And the price is prohibitive. I do have a couple who do it and love it, so that's good.
Sure.
What I recommend for everybody, and this will not shock those of you who have heard other podcasts, but guess what? Omega fatty acids. Am I a broken record? But...
You know, I'm right there with you breaking that record.
Okay.
Could not agree more.
There's actually foods that are formulated for dementia.
Yes.
And the key ingredient in them is an increase in omega fatty acids or fish oil. There's one prescription diet made by a company called Hill's, and the diet is called BD. It stands for brain diet. Not a very creative name. And
but you don't forget it, do you? Right?
Exactly.
That's what I love about Hill's.
Yeah.
KD, kidney diet. How about that?
I know. It's like they made it so idiot-proof for us. We're like, thank you. We're so numb at the end of the day. We're like, we need this HD heart diet.
Okay. Right.
There's an over-the-counter one, too. Purina ProPlan makes one called Bright Mind. And I have a lot of my clients who, you know, they might not want to pay for the Anapril, might not want to pay for the prescription food, but they're like, you know, the Purina stuff, it's still expensive, but it's doable, and they're really happy with it. And some people say that they've actually seen improvement in their dogs simply from a food change, which I'm like, hey, what have you got to lose? You know,
right.
Give it a shot.
Right. Now, definitely, there's no downside. It's loaded with antioxidants, which we know are also helpful for all the tissues, really, but the brain as well. You know, the neurons, as you well know, they're the wimpiest cells in the body. You know, I remember my medical physiology professor. He was great. He used to say, "Oh, the neurons."
Once they any injury at all, they're like, "I'll just wither and die."
I'll just wither and die. Yeah. I have no ability to survive.
Yes.
There's lack of oxygen in the body. Sorry, I'm out.
Yeah, I know. Like the first ones to tap out for anything.
They do tap out. The wimpiest. Luckily, there's an overabundance of them, which us humans do a great job of destroying in our own way. But, they're very wimpy cells, which makes really the central nervous system, you know, something that's very delicate or can be very delicate. Like you said, there's no downside. Absolutely. Have you gone down the path of SAMe?
I do it with livers a lot of livers, sure. Meaning liver patients.
Right.
Patients inside. Livers inside patients. I have a couple owners who try like Denisil or Denamarin, which is a SAMe containing product.
Right.
And just because they do have some anti-inflammatory or antioxidant effects as well. So I have some people who do it. Some people, again, it's a mixed bag. Some people swear by it. Some people say it didn't do anything. It can't hurt.
Right.
So do it.
And it's good for the liver too.
Yeah, exactly. So,
right.
Hey.
I mean, just to kind of explain, SAMe, let me see if I can, S-adenosyl methionine.
Yep.
Right, but S-A-M-E is how you see it on the labels.
Yep.
And I really can't get into the mad biochemistry of it. There was a time and a place in a galaxy far, far away where I can rattle that stuff off. But really, it's mostly has to do with, like, groups like methyl groups. You know, the... methyl, it's three hydrogens, one carbon. That's a methyl group, right?
Oh, no. Amine is NH2. See, I should have prepped for this. I don't remember, but I know a methyl group is NH3, maybe? I don't know. But yeah, talking about on a molecular basis here, like hydrogen atoms around unknown.
Transfers of charged molecular groups that move readily from one molecule to another, really, to much larger molecules. And then also the movement of sulfur, so transsulfuration. And for whatever reason, these things are very helpful in anabolic reactions in the body, which is why it helps the liver to regenerate and protects the liver and does whatever it does for the brain. I don't know exactly what that is. But I've had the same mixed bag of results. I think one of the things when you go down the path of – and they talked about SAMe quite a bit at the Washington State lectures. And the important thing when you go down the path of supplements, as we well know, these are not FDA-regulated items. So you want to stick with, you know, veterinary-grade stuff or at least, you know, GNC brand or something that has a reputation behind it. You don't want to go with, like, I won't say the name, but Superstore brand.
Or if your friend down the street sells makeup and supplements and body wraps or something, you know, you might not want to get those. Well, actually, there was, this was a few years ago, so I'm hoping things have changed since then. I doubt it, but God, I hope. Oh, there's actually a study that showed over-the-counter supplements, like name brand, like you find in main stores, the amount of actual herb or whatever they claim to have on the label versus what it actually contained in the pills was grossly different. And some were over and some were under. And it was just depressing to be like, well, why even have a label and why say it's 100 international units? Because just spin the wheel. Who knows what you're getting? So I'm hoping after that expose, they've kind of gotten their act together. But these are even like the big brands, which really brought me pause. But again, that was years ago. So I think now after that, a lot of them have had some pressure put on them. And they're kind of like, hey, maybe we should actually put what we say is in these pills and these pills.
Yeah. And yeah, there's more consumer watchdog agencies out there.
Thank God.
But the biggest offenders are the superstores. And again, I don't have deep enough pockets to get sued by these people. But you can just use your brain and figure out who they are.
So okay, yeah.
They're probably America's favorite place to go, or one of them, for various things, and they sell everything. Among one of the biggest offenders, by the way, just garbage supplements. And there's another one, too, that's really popular. So just guess what those two are. Again, I'm not going to say it.
Actually, I don't know, but I'm not going to guess on the air. I'll ask you later. But
you could ask me anyway, after the show.
And if your vet carries one, cool. And, you know, and there's good ones out there that maybe, you know, I'm not saying that only vets have all the good stuff, you know. I'm sure there's some out there that you can find that, you know, that you don't have to get from your vet, you know. So, and actually there's some crap stuff that they make available to us vets too. So we're not magic. I mean, there's some crap that these salesmen come. I'm like, I am not selling that with a straight face, you know. So
absolutely.
It goes both ways.
It most certainly does. So like in the SAMe world, we like Denisil is a pretty reliable brand.
Denimarin's
got the added benefits of having SAMe and milk thistle, which gives you
selenium.
What's that?
And vitamin E and selenium,
right? So it's like a liver happy, brain happy deal there. Any others you could think of?
No, those are the ones I ever prescribe or carry.
Yeah, me too.
And I've seen like just plain SAMe in the vitamin aisle.
Sure.
For, you know, so.
GNC makes it.
But see, I'm used to the nice veterinary formulations, but I'm not really sure I know how to dose it if it's in a bottle, because the nice little veterinary boxes has a picture of like a cat on the box. And I say, this is the cat size. And then it has a picture of a big dog. And I'm like, this is the big dog size. Right. So I need that help.
Sure. So. Yeah, they come in the three different sizes.
Yes,
you see a Russell, a Cocker Spaniel, and a whatever the big dog is.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm like, see, I need that for my, because when you're stressed out and you're grabbing, you're like, yes, cat, fluffy, on the box. So.
Yeah. And plus for some things, especially like in the joint supplement world, there's not to go on a tangent. We're good at tangents lately. I'm so bad at that. But there's stuff that's just not really absorbable in the canine gut unless it's prepared right. Glucosamine is a great example. Whether one believes in glucosamine or not, one thing is definitely true. It's vastly not absorbable if you give human grade for dogs. They're not going to absorb it well. I don't know how that applies to cats, but that's been, you know, clinically proven. So there might be absorption properties. So, you know, just stick with the stuff that is made for them and something that veterinarians trust, because these companies, who makes Denimarin? Is it Nutramax?
Yes.
Yes. Nutramax. I mean, that's a company that has a reputation on the line. Let's say AHA or the AVMA decides to do a random study of a product and finds it hey, guess what? Nutramax is full of crap. You know, that's going to hit that company really hard. Versus, you know, Superstore, they could not care less.
Yeah.
Like, whatever. They'll get that out there to a very small handful of people. No one's going to care. We'll get plenty of people coming in to buy our stuff. It's all good.
Yeah. No, it's true. And the veterinary companies actually put more research into both efficacy and safety, you know, of these products, which is nice. And the nice thing about a lot of these, too, is, thankfully, there's a really wide range of safety. You know, I mean, it's pretty hard to OD on glucosamine, you know.
Right.
I mean,
right.
I have dogs who eat the whole bottle, and I'm like, man, that costs you a lot of money, but that's about the only, you know, problem you're going to find, so... Like, it was a $50 bottle. Yeah, that's why the owner's weeping. The dog's sitting there like, oh, whatever, you know. So, anyway. But, and then to go back to the whole topic of dementia.
Yes.
Okay, about this. One other thing I mentioned in my article that I think would be worth mentioning is there are a lot of things we can do that are not necessarily drugs that can help a dog with dementia. Kind of like, instead of child-proofing your old dog-proofing your house, you know, but increasing mental stimulation is actually good for humans with Alzheimer's as well as dogs. In humans, they actually suggest, you know, brain puzzles, crossword puzzles, word finds, you know, number games, all that good stuff. And in dogs, there's actually dog toys you can get. You can even invent your own, hide and seek, whatever, you know, to kind of keep your brain stimulated. Calm toys, I like. I actually found, I think it was just like this generic brand on Amazon. It was the coolest thing. It was like a plate, like a big, like dinner plate size with a lid on it, and it spun and it had four little lids that opened up. And so you have to open the lid to get the food out of the hole, but it spins. You have to keep moving it around, and you have to keep opening different lids to find the food. And, my young, healthy dog figured out in 2 seconds flat how to get the food, you know. But it was a very good mental activity, you know, just to be like, okay, if I open this one and it turns this way, then I might get the treat, you know. So there's a lot, thankfully, these days are really good toys for dogs, and cats actually, too, that just kind of get their brain working. Go for a walk. That's huge. Go sniff some poop.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Right. Fire hydrants. Sniff the heck out of those. Sniff everything. I mean, they're it's hard to quantify, but statistically, and it varies, but you know, depending on who you speak to, but or what research group you hear, but it's like somewhere a dog's sense of smell is somewhere between 200,000 and 300,000 more acute times. I'm sorry, 200 to 300,000 times more acute than ours. Meaning that's how much more sensitive they are. And it's been actually quantified that a intact male dog, so he still has his boys, can smell a female and heat from as far as 2 miles away if the wind is right.
Wow.
Have you ever, I mean, that's incredible. I mean, if I had a sniffer like that as a teenage boy, good Lord, God help me. You know, and it's like, so... That's a whole other thing I tell owners. I'm like, you know, the poor dog, if you can smell it from 2 miles away and there's multiple dogs in the county going and eat all at once, that poor creature, does he have an itch he can't scratch? You know, neuter the poor boy. But back to your point, though, sniffing and you know, the fact that dogs put together really, it's believed, whole landscapes in their mind based on their sniffer, which is truly incredible. If you look at their olfactory bulbs in the ratio of the size of the olfactory bulbs in comparison to ours, those are the sensory apparatus of the brain that's actually picking up the actual sensory intake. It's astronomical, especially in certain breeds like bloodhounds and beagles and hounds like that. But sniffing, it's, you know, going for a walk and sniffing familiar smells, maybe the dog next door or whatever it is. It could be such mental stimulation, probably even more than the little games you were talking about.
Oh, yeah, because I'll be walking my boys, and one will go and sniff something, and the other two, it's funny, they'll all, like, converge on this, leaf, blade of grass. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever, run over, roadkill, whatever, and they're all, and you cannot get them off it.
Yeah.
I mean, you are sitting there going, well, I'm standing here until you're done sniffing.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I actually have a very hard time walking my Labrador because he stops and sniffs every like nanosecond, you know? So I actually have to walk him down the middle of the street. Otherwise I get nowhere.
Oh, you're that guy. Yeah.
I have to. I'm like, cause he's an 86 pound dog, you know, he's a big, one of those big labs. He's not fat.
But if you go often enough, what I've learned is eventually, like once you've sniffed it several times, you kind of learn the landscape. Like, kind of like you said, but and then it's all not new anymore. And so now we can walk. But it's so funny because all it takes is one new thing, and all three will just hone in at once. I'm like, oh, something must have vomited there. It's just amazing. Like, I don't see anything, and I'm just looking at this going, okay, and yeah. But otherwise, you can walk pretty normally, but. Yeah, but anyway, that is just such good stimulation to see things, sure. And it's exercise, you know, the whole package. And even if your dog is old and decrepit, like my poor old dude with dementia, we'd walk three houses down and three houses back. I live in a, like, neighborhood where the houses are built in the 60s, okay? They are not far apart.
Yeah.
And it took us 30 minutes, okay? Right. I mean, it was just... We'd stop and stare for a while. I'm sure the neighbors all thought I was nuts with this dog, like stopping and we're both just staring at nothing, just like, well, this is what we're going to do now, you know. Then I'd finally get his attention. Hey, let's not be in the middle of the road like Dr. Roger. A car's coming, and I'm always telling him, like, you know, squished wieners don't have any fun. You know, let's get out. But no, that can do wonders for him too. And you know your dog, and you can gauge how far they can go and, you know, make it fun. Don't make it a forced march.
Sure.
You know, but yeah. And what I tell people too with dementia is the big thing is patience.
Oh yeah.
They're not doing this out of spite.
Right.
They're not, this isn't, you know, revenge pee or whatever people think it is. They're not ignoring you. Like we talked about the selective hearing, you know, mm-hmm. They're not mad at you or anything. Some days they might not even know who you are, or who they are. If it gets, you know, but I mean, but just love him. And like when my guy would pee while he walked, I just walk behind him and be like, hey buddy, that's cool. And he was like, what? I'm like, nothing happened here. You know, just carry on.
Sure.
Just don't want to ruin this day.
And the patience is, that's such an important point. And I'm glad, you know, you brought that up because there is a compassion here that, you know, how sad that a lot of these dogs are getting, you know, verbally scolded or God forbid anybody would strike a geriatric dog, but even verbally scolded. And what is that going to do? It's going to frighten them because they're more prone to anxiety as well.
And they're more confused. Then.
They're more confused. And so just don't yell at them. Be patient and recognize it. And again, ask your vet questions because it's a tragedy for them just like it is for people. And we just have to manage them through it to the best of our ability. Until there's a point where they, like your dog, reach, they are an empty shell and they're just existing for the sake of existing. And then you do the right thing, like you did.
Yeah.
You know?
Because when they don't even love their favorite thing anymore, like eating,
right.
You know.
Sure.
I mean, I'm the crazy person who he wouldn't eat, so I, you know, canned cat food, in case you don't know, is magic when you have a dog who won't eat.
Oh,
well, so then you get to...
coming out the other cake. End, most of them won't deny that either.
Oh, yeah.
It's like pate to them.
Okay. I call it buffet-style dining, but yeah.
There you go.
But no, I mean, I spent 6 months sauteing canned cat food. Do you know what canned cat food smells like when it's sauteed?
God, I know what it smells like without sauteing it.
Oh my God, my house was horrible. With sirloin, because he had to have ground, and that was, I mean, but I'm like, dude, if that's what you eat, and my husband's like, how long are we going to do this? I'm like, and as long as the dog eats it. It was ridiculous. I mean, yes, I am the person who probably went too far. I'm a vet, and I even went too far. So it just shows that it can happen to anybody, but
when it's your own dog, you don't have your veterinarian hat on. You have your pet owner hat, and that's just long and the short of it. Everything's different. I even have to leave the room when my dogs need an injection. I'm like, here, Tex, you do it.
Oh, really?
Bring it back to my office.
Well, it had somebody sick. I'm like, okay, I have no brain. You know, just yeah. Like if it was a patient of mine, it'd be like a cut and dry case, so easy. But it's my dog, and so I'm looking at the blood work going, oh my God, this is off by 0.05, you know, and otherwise I'd be like, you know. But it's so
it's
stupid.
Very different. That's why, you know, pediatricians, they're not their kids' doctors. I don't know, I don't think they're even allowed to be. I don't even think it's a choice, but I don't know the rules there. Maybe that's not true, but I know a lot of pediatricians that don't treat their kids, or I don't know any that do. So,
yeah.
Very good article. It's up on your blog right now. Is it one of your latest ones?
It's somewhat recent. It's on vetchick.com. I think it still shows up in the column on the right under recent articles. Yeah. But it's called Doggy Dementia, aka canine cognitive dysfunction. And I actually wrote this one. I wasn't setting out to write an article on dysfunction. I was actually writing an article on how to tell if your dog is in pain. And a common myth people have is that, oh, he'll whine, he'll cry, and that is a bunch of BS. They might vocalize from dementia, and I had to clarify that, which then led to the whole article about dementia. I was like, well, crap, now it's a whole other article.
Now it's a whole other article, yeah.
But
so they're cross-linked, I would...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they're both, I mean, it's similar, it's both old dogs we're sure. talking about, you know, yeah. so...
And we need to differentiate between the two, and you had mentioned before the show that you may actually pluck up the courage to actually write a cat dementia article.
Yeah, I'm working on the same kind of pair of how to tell if your cat is in pain and kitty cat dementia, which, Dr. Roger, I like what you said. You're like, there's a reason there's no cat trainers. You know, there's dog trainers. There's no one training yeah. cats. Yeah. Very I always cute. Tell my clients, there's a reason no one goes into kitty cat psychology either.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, they're very mysterious creatures. They're really little islands unto themselves. I mean, hey, I wish you luck with that. I can't wait to yeah. I can't wait to read it.
Don't and now that I've said it, I'm committed. So
don't know if we can dedicate a whole show to it, but we'll see how it comes out. I'm certainly looking forward to that. Well, time flies when we're having fun. You know, this was a phenomenal topic, so I really thank you for bringing it to the awareness here, because the moment you told me about it last time we spoke, I was like, what a phenomenal show topic, because we really need to spread the awareness. So folks out there, if you happen to catch Dr. Karen's article, you know, get it out there. Also, you know, this episode, get it out there. Let people be aware of this, because it's so, so important. Any closing thoughts there, Dr. Karen?
No, it's important, and I think it's overlooked.
Oh, yes.
You know.
Even by veterinarians.
And I think also I'll point out too, this is not something that your veterinarian will diagnose. This is one of the things that you as an owner have the power to diagnose, because we come in, your dog has adrenaline. If you go to, I don't have a house call vet, so I see it a little bit differently, but if you go to a vet clinic, you know, there's all kinds of stimulation going on. Their adrenaline's up. They're at their peak. So your vet is not going to see these symptoms, and your vet might be in a rush and might not have the time to ask you about them. So look at the article, look at the symptoms, bring them up to your vet and say, hey, you know what, I'm seeing these symptoms, what can I do? And again, it's kind of an empowering thing to think this is a disease that you can diagnose and your vet can't. How cool is that? You know?
Yeah, it's extremely empowering. No one knows your dog better than you do, honestly, yeah. when it comes to that sort of thing. So, it's a great point. Great point. Great closing. So thank you again for listening, everybody. I really appreciate your time and taking a moment to listen to us. Karen, any parting words there?
No, just thanks for listening. Spread the word about doggy dementia.
All right. Good night, everyone. Shit.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.